So we have a special guest at T-Rex today, Scott, who most of you probably know through Nocturnality. And I want to talk to Scott more about how he got started in night vision and what are the things that he has learned over the years, because he has, I would say, a very unique perspective. Welcome back to another T-Rex Talk. Some of you probably know Nocturnality on Instagram as a really interesting repository of night vision knowledge and as a business that sells night vision equipment. So, Scott, tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Best way to describe us is a night vision custom shop where we build night vision goggles and sell them, typically in kind of like a custom configuration. But we're also heavily involved in the kind of like the information space for night vision and trying to get that out there and for the customer's benefit as well, you know, and that's pretty much what we're all about.
Yeah. So you got started early on in the days when night vision was even more mysterious than it is now. And it's been really cool to see how, I don't know, there's just a better understanding of night vision now than say 10 or 15 years ago. Probably because there's just more night vision out there. People have touched it, felt it, looked through it. It is no longer the forbidden, you know, unobtainable stuff. And there are a lot of things in the gun world that have been that way at different times. Like body armor had a lot of snake oil attached to it because it was not common. But now you go to a gun store, there's body armor. You can pick it up. You can feel it. You can hold AR 500 in one hand and ceramic in the other and be like, oh, I kind of know what my dollar's getting me at this point.
Right.
And you can't really do that with night vision at gun shows per se, but I'm starting to see night vision at gun shows in a way that I didn't 10 years ago. And the knowledge on the internet is better, partly because of guys like you who actually know your stuff, but also because of random guys like me having actually looked through it. Now, when I talk about night vision,
right,
compared to 10
right.
years ago,
yeah.
It isn't books about the Navy SEALs that I read when I was a kid in the public library. It is actual, like, some minimal hands-on experience.
Proliferation of the actual product itself, you know, that goes a long way. The interesting thing about the night vision world is that unlike other, you know, technology markets and things like that is, you know, there's not the influence of the main companies involved in the development of the technology itself. They're not controlling the message. They're not putting information out.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's somebody who needs to step into that vacuum and kind of...
That's a huge, huge point. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that there are just a few companies making the tubes and they have zero contact with human beings.
That's what it all comes down to.
They don't even sell to human beings. They sell to military acquisition boards.
Yep.
And yeah, no, it's a bizarre product in a bunch of different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. So... that leaves the other part of the equation in terms of being able to, I talked about it yesterday. It's like, you know, education, a lot of companies, you know, education is like a platform to market from, you know,
yeah.
product education. But the thing about night vision is that education has to flow out of experience. And
yeah.
you can't really, you know, the average user or person typically cannot have relevant levels of experience with night vision because it's expensive and you can't go and buy all of the night vision and see like 100 different tubes of all the different manufacturers' types, get the sample size up there, notice some, you know, some trends and
right.
draw some
yeah.
conclusions, make some comparisons like that, at least not at a high enough level for it to really matter, you know, statistically speaking
sure.
or whatever. And so it takes somebody with, you know, probably in our position, since the main, you know, the OEMs don't really want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, someone like doing what we do, you know, could fill that void.
Yeah. You are in a very unique position because the people who we think of as the professional night vision users, like special forces guys, are issued specific things. They don't really shop around.
Right.
The companies that support them make something specific to order. They don't really shop around and Frankenstein and build and tinker. And then guys like me, I am a night vision aficionado, but my hands-on experience is pretty limited. It's mm-hmm. limited to a few things.
Mm-hmm.
You have been able to touch and taste and look through and tinker with lots and lots and lots of stuff.
Yeah, as the,
it's
as
pretty
the
amazing.
Builder, which is, you know, I build all the night vision for Nocturnality. That's, so we have the user side, you know, I go out and I use night vision probably, you know, several hundred hours a year in like the field sense, doing either shooting or hiking or just like any number of things where I'm have a complete device, I'm out actually using it. And of course, we use those as opportunities to test things and kind of draw conclusions and image stuff and share it or whatever. But then there's the building side of it too. And that's where like I get dozens and dozens and hundreds of repetitions of looking at tubes and seeing any like, okay, you know, what are the inconsistencies or this or the visual kind of anomalies, like, and then you connect that with what's the, you know, what are the tube data sheet telling me about how that tube behaves and is made, you know, the sensitivity's not photocathode or it's not. And then like, okay, the highly sensitive ones tend to maybe do like, you know, this weird anomaly a little bit more. You know, is there something to that or whatever? And then you can draw conclusions from that.
And sometimes, we've talked about this a bit in the past, because night vision is expensive, it's a little hard to know about. It's really easy to kind of go down the rabbit trail of reading the spec sheets and being like, man, this is expensive. I want to buy once, cry once. I need the perfect tube.
Yeah.
And I've done this with camera equipment too. But I think that it's really easy to focus on, do, you know, pixel peeping with a camera and be like, well, the level of sharpness that you're going to gain on this sensor, you will never notice in real actual footage.
Yeah.
You will never actually notice the softness in the corners of this lens in real actual use case. And night vision, I believe, is really the same way, where when you look at a white wall in your house, you can see little imperfections.
Yeah.
And when you're outside, they are completely invisible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, talk about that. Now that you have experimented across a wide range of FOMs and tube types, what are some of the mistakes that we've made in the past as, like, I'm putting myself out as a night vision researcher, but not so much a user. What are some of the mistakes that night vision researchers like me have fallen into where we picked a number, a particular score to seek after, or a particular blemish to never, you know, that we wanted to never see, and that was actually a dead end, like not actually a good score?
Yeah, there's some application based aspects to it, because night vision can be used for specialist applications like astrophotography, astronomy, that type of thing.
Yeah,
and in those discussions where the idea is, you know, the end result is capturing the best images, you know, or seeing the coolest representation of, you know, real life, but at night, that's where numbers and stuff, even minute numbers, like, that does make sense.
Yes. Yeah. If you need to detect 4 photons from a star cluster that is far away, it matters.
It does matter.
Yeah.
And in the field, if we're talking about, you know, I'm into night vision for, you know, tactical use and gun stuff because I like shooting and all those reasons. And I think that's where most of the market still is.
That is where most of the podcast listeners are too.
Yeah. And even just generalist activities, which are also gaining in popularity, like night hiking and e-biking and even marine, you know, uses, stuff like that. Yeah. Like for those general things where we're doing like a macro task, not a micro task, that's where, you know, your differences in 36 SNR versus 38 SNR or whatever, those will never become, they will never pay the dividend that you want them to. You know, that night vision is a very easy thing to become an enthusiast for because it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's super expensive. You know, it creates enthusiasts like quickly, and enthusiasts want to nerd out and, you know, think about all the numbers and stuff. And
yeah, it is really interesting how it has sort of developed from being a extremely niche military, a basically military only tool, to a really fascinating hobbyist thing where you can focus on night vision and be a night vision collector, or it can be the thing that lets you take your outdoor hiking, your hunting, your boating to the next level.
It is
really fascinating to see how that has developed. And you got into it primarily because you were already into guns.
Yeah, that's entirely it.
Primarily into shooting, and this was just sort of the next step up, the next thing that you add to that.
I assume that most, maybe now it's changing with the proliferation where people are just aware that night vision is a thing that they could go and get. But like before, I didn't think of it that way because it predominantly wasn't out there very much. I mean, I just thought of it as the thought of doing other things at night in the dark because I could now see didn't really ever occur to me, mm-hmm, you know, yeah. But I think people are potentially thinking about it that way now.
Yeah. It is really interesting to see that develop. And I think that there's two reasons why I think that's cool. Number one, it's great that people just understand night vision better.
Yeah.
And hopefully as people get better understanding, there's more of it out there. People just can experiment with a little bit, try on a friend's night vision, see what it's like, realize like, oh, I can actually see around these little imperfections and blemishes or see through some of the noise better. I think with night vision, there's also I don't know the right words. There's almost like a mystical element to it. Like it is a magic telescope. It is not like looking at a camera viewfinder. And so it's really easy to look at two pictures and be like, man, that blemish is going to be really ugly. And then when you put it on, you kind of see through it in a way that you don't see through dead pixels or dust on a camera sensor in the same way. It is odd.
Yeah.
To talk through and letting people actually see that and experience that a little bit just makes everything sort of, you know, you can almost see a light bulb come on when people look through night vision. They're like, oh, I see. It really is real time and it really is like looking through a magic telescope, but it's not a screen.
The latency difference between analog and digital is huge.
Yeah.
You know, just like from an user experience thing. And strangely enough, I think the fact that the viewing areas are circles. Mm-hmm. And merge together in somewhat of a similar way that our eyes put images together, of course, more limited field of view. I think that has a lot to do with it, rather than looking at a square screen.
Have you tried the Psyonix Opsit?
Yeah, I did last time I was out here.
Okay, Yeah, it was a massive leap forward usability-wise from the Aurora, but still, you're looking at a screen. Seeing past the screen, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
With night vision, you're just seeing.
Yep.
You're not looking really at something. It doesn't feel like that.
It's very, So it's one of those things that, you know, we're going to continue to make night vision videos, but they are not really representative of looking through the tube. And
right.
So, yeah, one of the things that I want to do is do a little bit more comparison of tubes with the exact same camera and the exact same camera mount, which will get you as close as possible to actually knowing what the differences are. And yet there is this screen intermediate that is totally.
Yeah. You can't really replicate it fully.
Yeah.
Without actually just being there in person. And that comes back to the market too. You know, it's challenging from a marketing perspective to sell products that you most commonly cannot actually show customers.
Yeah. And that's why one of the reasons I'm very excited that there is a wider proliferation so that the more night vision that you sell, the more eyeballs are going to look through that night vision, the better understanding everyone's going to have of whether or not they can afford it, whether or not they have to pay top dollar for top quality, highest FOM tubes, or whether they, you know, I actually am spoiled by a lot of the night vision that we have here at T-Rex. And I have decided that the thing that I enjoy most is just a binocular. So I can have one eye that is adjusted and has peripheral vision and, you know.
Really?
I bet it would be different if I were doing high combat activities, but I have done more walking and hiking than I have flat range, high speed shooting. And so I just have decided, like, that is what I like. I like not carrying binos. I like being able to put this in my pocket. I like a skull cap. There's a lot of things that I like about that minimal setup, even though quads are.
Quads are awesome. Yeah, they are. They're a lot heavier, that's for sure. They're a lot more expensive. I mean, the PVS-14 will live probably forever, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
we
just did the product video for the 14, and the main point is that yes, duals are probably like in terms of the efficiency of learning night vision and getting experience in our night vision.
The curve is
way shorter, but
it's easier on your brain.
If you want to look at it from the value perspective, the amount of capability you gain from investing in a PVS-14 versus the money spent is way higher on the PVS-14 versus binos.
And I realize that I may be weird. My brain is probably weird because I spent many years looking through one camera viewfinder.
Yeah.
And the other eye doing whatever. So I'm probably not your average consumer. But yeah, being able to try everything, including quads, I walk away thinking, you know, binos are great. Mm-hmm. But what I'm going to often carry is a PVS 14.
What's a really cool thing, just like a tool to have, is even if you have binos,
yep,
a 14 with a 3X magnifier.
Yes.
Oh, man. I love that combo just for like looking around at stuff and being able to see further away. That's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You just reminded me that's something that is on my to-get list. And then have you looked into magnifiers for thermal?
Magnifiers for thermal? No, I haven't.
They do make them, but they are ridiculously expensive because, of course, they cannot be made out of glass.
Right. Germanium.
They have to be made out of germanium.
Yeah.
So that's a niche product. You mentioned something interesting about thermal. I think last time you were here, that the FUDs have leapfrogged the Tacticool dudes, and they have widely adopted thermal.
Yes.
Before the Tacticool dudes have.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an interesting observation.
Yeah. The hunters, I mean, it's a specific type of hunter for sure, but.
FUD may not be the right word, but it's funnier.
I mean, it's definitely FUD adjacent. If it's not true, you know, they have. It's the best. It's the best tool for their uses, no doubt. It's funny to see the difference in the conversations in those different kind of sub communities too.
Yes, yeah.
You know, they're all the hunter guys are going like, does anybody use night vision when you're moving out to your, you know, hunt location or whatever? And I'm thinking like, yeah. How else do you do it? Like, you tell me you just walk around in the dark.
Yeah,
you know. And then all the night vision guys are going like, has anybody tried this thermal stuff?
Has anyone tried to use thermal to look for warm things?
Yeah, right. Uh huh. Who does that?
Interesting.
Yeah, and really like, but once you start finding the right way to combine both, if you're so inclined and you know have the application for it, I mean you. Mm-hmm. You start to really see, like, you know, you can be pretty capable with the two together.
Yes, yeah. What are some of the other... Let's talk about thermal more in the future.
Okay. Well, I'm not a thermal expert.
But you have looked through thermal, and you have paired the two together more than a number of folks. And I value your opinion on it because you have enough night vision time. But I've talked to a number of thermal guys, like, thermal is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much time do you have under knots? Like, I looked through some once.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, you know, cool. I value thermal opinion. But you have context that is larger, deeper.
I have a decent amount of time with thermal.
So let's talk about that again in the future podcast. But you've been doing night vision stuff several years now. And you've been doing nocturnality as a business, building night vision for folks for a while now. You've probably seen a lot of trends sweep through the tactical Instagram community and the wider gun community. And what are some of the most interesting? I'm curious because we watch trends, but here at T-Rex, I've seen some things, but you probably had a different perspective.
Yeah, I think that, it's like we'll get down into the weeds on, you know, feature level discussions. And it's just like kind of like the changing of the tides or something, like one, you know, year or quarter or whatever. It's just like all of a sudden, like this one particular feature becomes like, oh, that's the only type of night vision binocular I would consider buying. Or like you have to have this feature. Like I'm thinking like manual gain control. You know, I start seeing that more and more. And it is a valuable feature, no doubt.
I love manual gain.
Sure.
But it isn't the end all be all.
Most
people. And I do remember now, actually, now that you brought that up, I do remember that being like anyone that doesn't have manual gain control on his night vision will die.
Yeah, like you're dead because I have it and I'm going to get you, bro. I'm, you know, the people with lots of experience tend, in my, you know, observation, tend to be like a little more neutral and are just kind of like, they have preferences, they see the value in different things, but when it comes down to actually like, you know, doing a task or performing, you know, at night, like on the range or something like that, the people with experience tend to be pretty comfortable with most things and maybe have a preference, but a lot of times you tend to kind of like a little bit grow out of some of, you know, the dependence,
yeah,
absolute utter dependence on like, I got to have this,
yeah,
or I won't, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Or even, I also remember, so FOM is the one number score for a two.
Yeah.
But it is the combination of many other scores.
Yeah. And two other scores.
Yeah. Oh, right. Only two other scores.
Yes.
Sorry. And then there's additional
right
things that are graded. And people, I notice at different times, have been really hung up on specific scores or
very
specific
much
things.
Very much.
And yeah. Yeah. It really, now that I think about it, is no different than other trends in the community when people are like, recce rifles. Recce rifles are the thing.
Right, yeah. But it was Mark 18s before.
Before that, it was Mark 18s.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, that's just the last Grand Thumb video.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is very similar. You know,
gotcha.
You know, we're as far as trends go, yeah, we're probably behind most of the rest of the gun industry because we're only getting to the point now where enough people have it that we start seeing the trends. There's critical mass.
But it's good that the trends are now coming from people that actually have and are using night vision.
Yeah.
As opposed to speculating about it.
Sure.
Because
yeah,
they plan to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is next? And not just like a trend, like not the next recce rifle, but what is the next thing that's going to come along, do you think? There's a bunch of little companies who have started to build additional housings, accessories, mounts. They're it's still a very niche item for a very niche industry, but it is now the interest, the education, product supply is there. A number of companies are supporting it. That is really cool. What do you think the next few years looks like?
Like most things in the gun industry and consumer products world, I think Chinese influence.
Okay. Yeah.
Chinese, NNVT is a manufacturer of Gen 2 tubes that are, you know, somewhat in the recent, like probably in the last 18 months, maybe a little more recent than that, have started to be imported into the U.S. for commercial sale. You know, it's the same story as with all other Chinese products. They're fairly decent and they cost, you know, enough. They're still expensive, don't get me wrong, but they're less money by comparison, enough to start, you know, just drawing a little bit more market,
mm-hmm,
a little bit
yeah
more market.
Yeah.
And performance-wise, you know, I can't stand up here and say like, well, you shouldn't really care that much about specs and then say like these tubes are not good, because they do look pretty good. But what does concern me a little bit, at least, and why we're not, you know, jumping on the Chinese tube bandwagon just yet, at least, is
yeah
we need to be able to determine what the useful lifespan of the tubes are.
Exactly. Yeah.
We need to be able to determine what the failure rate of the tubes are.
Yep.
You know,
for sure,
before we're just like putting them in everybody's hands, because they are still a big investment. Like, yeah, they might be a little cheaper, but you're still going to spend $5,000 on a binocular night vision device.
And it may only last 3 years.
Yeah, you might
once had them for more.
I mean, as far as we know, you know, until now, like night vision lasts forever. It'll last your lifetime, my lifetime, your kids, probably, yeah, depending on how much you use it.
Well, currently, I don't let my kids use it.
Okay, well, that's probably
can use the Aurora. I told you this story earlier, but I'll just say it again for the podcast. My son James, who is 7, last night was trying to convince me I have to go out to the range to watch Mr. Scott use the night vision because I have to learn night vision. And I was like, that is true, James. You do have to learn night vision, but we have night vision at home. Anyway.
So
yeah.
One of the things that controls all of the night vision trends and weirdness and, you know, all this stuff, the market, is that there's only a few companies making tubes. There's more companies now making housings because those are somewhat easy to make.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't need $100 billion R&D project.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But more companies making twos would radically change the industry.
Yeah.
I don't think the NNVTs, you know, the Chinese tubes, are necessarily going to radically change the industry.
Right. It's really just another supply.
Just an evolution.
With a different supply chain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do think that digital is close enough that it is a hard sell for anyone to start up new analog tube manufacturer. Like it is.
Yeah.
It is that would be an extremely expensive proposition for something that may not have a super long lifespan.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. What are your thoughts on digital? Digital cameras have gotten better, but we've just talked about how awesome magic telescopes are compared to
yep
flat sensors and screens.
Yep.
But at some point, do the do the extra features of digital overcome the limitations that that screen sensor combo has?
I think that's like there's truth in there, or likelihood in there, and also unlikelihood. So I think that because vacuum-based image tubes, 18-millimeter format using night vision, are so darn good at what they're supposed to do in terms of form factor and weight and power consumption and performance and latency and all the things.
Yes.
Okay. And availability. You're not going to come in and supplant those. But I think all the benefits of digital that, you're probably running through in your mind, I don't think it has to be the all digital to come in and take over. I think you can combine both in a way that's beneficial. And we're already doing that.
Sure. There are
overlays.
Yeah. And there are, even outside of the helmet mount and even outside of human worn night vision, I see people in other industries fusing image intensifier tubes directly to cameras.
Yeah.
And skipping a bunch of lens assemblies when they do that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That's...
You kind of get the strengths of both, but you also get the weaknesses of both. And there's probably some different ways to do that.
Right.
And I think that there's probably going to be some new sensor technologies as well. Right now, everybody's just using silicon-based, CMOS and CCD sensors. There's probably some new stuff coming that detects with greater sensitivity and can detect electrons. And then you can immediately go straight from your tube to your camera without that second phosphor screen. So
yeah.
It's an interesting...
I think the bigger challenge is not like performance of sensors and being able to actually see well in the dark. I think it's more like the integration into something that you can wear on your head and power and sustain for a long time and have the same level of agility and, all that. I think that's more challenging.
Yeah.
It seems that way to me. I mean...
And that probably is going to be a major factor as well with drone usage. When you're flying cameras on little drone batteries long distance, I think there's value in a teeny tiny non-sensitive camera with a super efficient image intensifier tube glued to the front.
For sure.
That is a cool thought.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, thermal drones are you can just go out and buy a thermal drone.
Yep, for sure.
But a actual IR sensitive or a quote unquote night vision drone is much difficult to do, right? I mean,
I think everybody is just sort of waiting for the cameras themselves to get more sensitive.
Yeah.
But there is a way.
Yeah.
To put a small... And the other thing is you can make those image intensifier tubes. The 18 millimeters is a common size because that lines up with your human eyeball really well.
Yeah.
But if you are not connecting it to a human eyeball, you can make a much smaller tube.
Right.
Yeah.
Might be challenges with sensitivity there. I don't know. Useful echo diameter would be super small.
There is a limit to... You're still having to capture photons.
Yeah. They gotta have the photons, right? Yeah.
You can't turn nothing into a photon.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's still lots of life left in image intensifier tubes. There's lots of applications where they're the clear winner. And it's going to be like a lot of technologies. I think for beginners, digital is going to have some value. It's going to be easier for digital to overlay all of your land nav stuff for people who are not good at land nav. Easier to overlay all of your various other targeting tools for people who are not good at reading the environment. It will be very useful for beginners.
Yeah.
In a lot of respects.
Yeah.
People who don't know how good analog tools are.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I realize that this is a fairly short podcast, but I know that we will do future podcasts. I think that's where we'll leave this.
I'll be around.
And there's also an announcement that we're not going to make on the podcast, but podcast listeners do get the first hint of a clue of something that is coming. So you now know that we're hanging out with Scott at Nocturnality, and he's fun to talk to, and we'll be coming on the show for future podcast episodes. We'll be talking about thermal and let us know other stuff that you podcast listeners want to ask Scott about. But go and visit Nocturnality if you're interested in learning more about the bespoke solutions. What are some of the other things that you do? When you see good deals on night vision, do people come to you with night vision to sell?
They do pretty frequently.
And you often end up with cool, oddball stuff, right?
Yeah, sometimes. Part of it is, you know, trade-in.
Uh-huh.
That can be, you know, then rehomed and be valuable for someone else. And then part of it is just like, ooh, I want that. I'm just going to keep that, you know? That stays with me. So, yeah, there's been some of that for sure. Maybe a little too much.
So I have purchased quite a bit of night vision through folks on Air15.com.
Yeah.
David Botkin has found a bunch of very cool night vision deals on Air15.com. I now know enough people in the larger gun community that I occasionally hear about things being for sale. But you could also be a very cool broker, in addition to a builder, in addition to a guy who can find and build stuff out of new parts.
Yeah.
You could also be a really cool point of contact for people who want to trade and so forth. So
we
I'm just throwing that out there on the podcast for listeners. Like, if you're looking to trade up or down or sideways,
come talk to me.
Yeah. And keep listening for future updates on Project More Night Vision information. Let us know if you have questions, or I'm sure you can go directly to Nocturnality for specific FOM and Omni and bizarre esoteric knowledge.
Yes.
Dumps.
All the above.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Scott, and we will be in touch.